you are having a normal reaction to an abnormal experience. And as I was waiting for the DNA test results to come back, I experienced insomnia. I didn't sleep for weeks.
Hello, you are listening to NPE Stories. This is a podcast where NPEs can share their story. I am your host, Lily, and I found out I was an NPE through an ancestry DNA test that changed my life forever. NPE is a term that stands for not parent expected or non-paternal event. This means that one or more of our parents are not who we believe them to be. NPE Stories is a podcast where NPEs can share their story of what their original family was like, how they found out they were an NPE, and what their journey has been like since the day they found out. Welcome to episode 192, and today I am speaking with Doreen. Hi, Doreen.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing well, thanks. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, thank you so much for doing this. I am in the middle of a snowstorm right now. How about you?
We had a blizzard. I'm in Denver area. We had a blizzard, I think yesterday. Yeah, yesterday. But now it's already melting. So.
Oh my gosh. Oh, nice. Good. So you don't have to shovel.
No.
Denver. You're in Denver. I'm going to be in Denver in a month.
I'm going there.
Yay. The Untangling Our Roots Summit?
Yes. Yes.
Oh my gosh. Please, let's connect while we're there.
Yes, definitely.
Oh, I'm so excited. Oh, good. Okay. Are you showing up on Thursday or Friday?
Yeah, I'll be there both days.
And it continues Saturday. Yes, mm-hmm. I think I was just reading the email the Thursday they're having like a Misfits variety show or a comedian or something.
Yeah, something.
I was like, oh, that's great. I love that we're going to make jokes about this. So
right.
We try to laugh at this from time to time.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's hear about your story. Why don't you tell me about your family of origin?
Okay. I was born in 1962 in a small town in Northwest Ohio called Wauseon. I had one brother who is 15 years older than me, and I was told I was a surprise. So I can't ever tell that story without adding on things now, but nobody knew how much of a surprise I was, apparently. So my parents were almost 40 when they had me. And in terms of them, they were both in high school when World War II broke out. And my mom told me it wasn't a fun time to be in high school because of all the boys going off to war as soon as they graduated. And also, she told me that my dad lied about his age and enlisted in the war when he was only 17. I didn't know if that was just family lore or the truth, but later when I built our family tree online, I found his enlistment record, so I know that that was true. And my mom and dad met after the war was over, and when they met, my dad told my mom he wouldn't live a long life because of everything he experienced in the war. He fought in the Pacific Theater, and she told me he saw a lot of horrific things. He also contracted malaria while he was there, and he died of Hodgkin's disease when I was 3. My mom and brother didn't talk a lot about my dad, so I hung on to every little thing that they told me, and they were the kind of people who didn't talk about their feelings, and I felt very different from them. I was this creative, fun-loving little child, but I desperately wanted their affection and acceptance, as we all do, so I learned to bottle up my feelings and just generally not emote too much, especially when I was around them. And I always chalked up the way that they were to my mom's stoic German heritage and my dad's British heritage. And I still think that's partially true. But now that I've learned more the truth of my family, I've become more aware of the things that I believe molded them. My brother wasn't around much because he was grown and off at school and living his life as I was growing up. And then he got married when I was 8 years old. So when I was growing up, it was more like I was an only child. And I thought I had a pretty boring yet good childhood. My mom doted on me. I felt secure that she loved me. And the town I grew up in was kind of in its heyday in the 70s. So we had a nice public pool, for instance, that I practically lived at it in the summer. And when I was thinking about this, I was remembering that in town there was this old-fashioned general store with a soda fountain, and I would go there with my friends after school and eat junk food. And my neighborhood had quite a few kids in it, so we played outside all the time. My mom had two boyfriends that I remember, but she never remarried. Thank goodness. I didn't like either of them. Because my dad was in the war, she was entitled to belong to the American Legion, the VFW, and the Elks Club. So she was into all those things. And kind of looking back, I realized she had two sides to her because she always made me go to church. Her mother was very religious and very strict. But my mother also liked to hang out at the Legion Hall or the Elks Club and have a couple drinks. She wasn't an excessive drinker, but she would have a couple drinks and she liked to play the slot machines. And I know she hid the fact that she smoked from my mother or my grandmother. But I just think my mother was trying to have some fun because I don't think the rest of her life was very fun. So I don't blame her for that. And I realize now, listening to all those stories, that those people in my mom's generation, World War II, actually shaped their entire lives. When she went out, sometimes she got a babysitter for me, but sometimes I got dragged to her friends' houses when they played cards or had get-togethers. Now, she did have this one friend who had an in-ground pool. So in the summer, she and her friends would get together there and smoke and drink and have garbage can clam bakes. And I loved that because they let me swim and just pretty much ignored me. And I was happy with that. I just swam and played. And all the men in her group were in World War II. And they always had Sinatra or Dean Martin or Sammy Davis Jr. music playing. And I joke that that music was the soundtrack to my childhood. I always did well in school, but it's only been, again, looking back that I realize I was actually terrified of making mistakes. And I mean, this was all me. I'm not blaming my mother or my brother, but I always had this deep need to, like I said, fit in with them. And I just felt that they would not be kind if I got good grades. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I had decided as a little girl. So I never thought of myself as an anxious person, but also looking back, I realize I was pretty anxious all throughout my childhood, and I remember often feeling sick before school. What's funny to me now is that though I could logically say in every way I wasn't like my mother and my brother, I must have been like my birth certificate father, who I thought, you know, at the time was my father, but I always joked well into adulthood that I was adopted. And I also really admired people who grew up in big families and especially girls who had sisters that they were close to. I grew up and I met the man who would become my first husband. I met him in college, but then I got pregnant by him at the beginning of my junior year of college. So he and I went home to tell my mother, and I was terrified. I just kind of bluntly told her, and I think I was the first woman to go to a four-year college in my family. So, you know, I think she had some, you know, big hopes for me. And I think I disappointed her. But at the same time, over my entire life, she had maybe gotten angry with me less times than you can count on the fingers of one hand. But when I told her I was pregnant, she actually got angry and she said, "I thought you were smarter than that." And at the time, that gutted me. And that's a moment that now I have revisited many times over the last year and a half. Then, you know, back to my family, a second daughter came along 3 years later. So I had two children by the time I was 24. And I tried my best to make our marriage work, but my first husband and I divorced after 20 years. A couple of years after that, I met a great man and remarried in 2008, and my daughters were grown by then. And my husband and I like to watch the genealogy shows on TV, and so I joined Ancestry.com online because I just wanted to learn about my father's side. I didn't know anything beyond his parents, and he came from Great Britain and he had a last name that was Essex. And that being a whole region in Great Britain, I was hoping to trace back our ancestry to exactly where we came from. So I did that and I didn't find anything earth-shattering. But a couple of years after that, I asked for and got a DNA kit for Christmas. I was just hoping to find out that, and I guess I'm going into the next part of the story, but I was just hoping to find out that maybe I had some additional ethnicity that was more interesting than the British and German that I thought was all of me. When I got it back, my percentage of English ancestry was smaller than I thought it should be. So that was, yeah, like about 2019, I think. But it wasn't so much that I thought that something was wrong. From what I understand, their ethnicity estimates are based on comparing you to others who have had the test, if I understand that right. And obviously, a lot fewer people had had it done by then. I don't even remember looking at my DNA matches, but if I did, I obviously didn't see anything out of the ordinary. So again, I'm guessing my newly discovered family members hadn't yet gotten tests done. So when COVID hit, my youngest daughter was finishing a PhD program in New York State, and my oldest daughter was living in North Carolina with her husband and her grandkids. Neither my husband nor I had any family in Ohio anymore. Until that point, we felt like we had to stay in Ohio because of our jobs. But because of COVID, my office sent everyone home permanently to work, and people were starting to move away to other areas of the country. And my husband decided he was ready to look for a new position. And so in 2021, we found out that one of our best friends, as well as our daughter and her family, the one that lived in North Carolina, were all moving to Colorado. And we found this out on the same weekend. Not only that, but our friend was planning on buying a condo here in Colorado, but wanted to rent it out. So my husband and I started talking about moving to Colorado. And it was really crazy because our friend and our daughter and son-in-law ended up buying places 4.5 miles from each other. And they closed on their houses about a week apart. And it's not like they were coordinating that. They weren't even aware of what the other was doing except for what I was telling them. And my husband got a job. He interviewed on Zoom in Denver. And so I was allowed to keep my job and move. So in late June of 2022, we moved to Colorado, sight unseen, and are now still renting the condo from our friend. And we live close by my daughter and her family, and it's great. And it seemed like it was meant to be. So it was on October 27th, 2022, which was almost 4 months to the day that we arrived in Colorado, that I had just finished my work day, and I opened my laptop and looked at my personal email. And there was an email from Ancestry.com with the subject line, "New Ancestry DNA Feature Parental Matches." I didn't think there was much else to learn, but at the same time, I thought, cool, let's see what else there is. Famous last words. So I logged in and I clicked on the DNA matches by parent. And when I got to the next page, they had a section for maternal matches and a section for paternal matches. And each section had top 10 surnames of your DNA matches and an ethnicity pie chart. I glanced at my father's pie chart and it was mostly German. And I thought, well, that doesn't make any sense. So I looked at all the information on my mom's side and it all made sense. I recognized 7 of the 10 surnames on my mother's side. And so then I went back to my father's side. I didn't recognize any of the surnames that they were saying were in the top 10 surnames of the DNA matches on my father's side. And I remember thinking, well, that's not right. And then I saw at the bottom of the page, there was a note from Ancestry saying this was a beta feature and to let them know what I think. So I fired off a quick email saying I thought they made a mistake. Then I went right back to looking at my father's information. I went to the page where the individual DNA matches were listed. And the first person on the list they said was a first cousin, but I had never heard of her. Luckily, she had made a small family tree and made it public. So I clicked on that and I saw the last name of a family from our town that my family had been friends with when I was a child. And I clicked on a couple of individual names in her family tree. And those people had either been born or died in the same small town that I grew up in. And I started going into shock. And I believe I just started sinking further into shock by the minute. But I also knew what I was looking at. I knew what that had to mean. I started looking through all the names of my paternal DNA matches, looking for a name that I recognized. I think there were over 5,000 of them. So luckily, then I realized I could just type in the name in the search bar at the top of the page. And I started entering in every surname from my father's side that I could think of that I should be a blood relation to. And nothing came up. I even searched my maiden surname, and again, nothing came up. So logically, I knew that didn't necessarily mean anything more than that no one from my father's side had gotten a test on ancestry, but it wasn't looking good. The worst part was that my husband was in Florida taking care of his mom, who had just had knee surgery. My husband and I are very close and always in contact, even if one of us is out of town. And that was the one time I couldn't get a hold of him. His mom had had a reaction to her pain meds, and she was really sick. And I knew he had his hands full at that moment. I don't remember the next few hours, but I waited until after dinner and called my oldest daughter just to have someone to run this all by. And she said, "Grandma Essex, the woman who is content to sit in front of the TV and watch reruns of game shows from the 70s, of course, her only memories of her when she was older. And we joke about that now. But, you know, and I think almost all of us have trouble thinking of our parents and especially our grandparents as anything else except what they were in that role to us. And it's especially hard for us to imagine them as young people. But I finally reached my husband either that night or the next morning. Same with my youngest daughter. I don't remember which. I got a hold of them as soon as I could. And then, you know, by then it was clear to me what had happened from the information I was looking at online, but nobody else was there with me. So they were just hearing what I was telling them. They couldn't see what I was seeing. And so I could tell that no one else quite yet believed this was true. I mean, it's a little frustrating, but I get it. I mean, they were totally supportive. The next day was Friday, and I took that day off work because I was a mess. I knew I couldn't work. And I started thinking of the man that I now suspected was my birth father and his family. I knew that he and his wife had several children and that they were all older than me. But the only one whose name I could remember was their youngest son's name, and his name is Mike, and he was 4 years older than me. And here's a really funny story that I can't tell without cringing now. And the story is, I had a crush on Mike. The summer I turned 18, right before I left for college, a girlfriend and I went to a small bar in the next little town over, and he was there. And they had a dance floor, and we shared a couple of fast dances. And I'm cringing inside right now as I'm telling this story. But luckily, there was not anything else. There was no slow dances. There was no hugging or kissing or anything. Thank goodness. I even remember one of the songs we danced to. It was "You Shook Me All Night Long" by AC/DC. And I have no idea why I remember that. But yeah, again, I'm just so grateful that there was nothing else there. And then I started trying to dig into my memory to remember his dad and his mom's first name. And then when I did, I searched for them online and found their obituaries. My mother had also already passed away as well. And what's kind of funny is my mom, my now suspected birth father, and his wife all passed away within less than a year of each other, actually between May of 2006 and March of 2007. But I did see in the obits there were 5 children total in their family, and the oldest one had already passed away. So I started searching for Mike's contact information online. He wasn't on Facebook, but I got lucky and I found what was likely his current snail mail address. So I wrote him a letter. It took me forever. It was obvious in hindsight that my mind wasn't all there because I kept making these weird typos that I wouldn't normally make. And I would type out a sentence thinking it made sense and go back and reread it, and it didn't make any sense at all. And that's not normal for me, but I think it's indicative of of the mindset that we're in when something like this happens. So I wrote it and I rewrote it. And as an aside, I'm also an artist, and my mother and brother didn't have any interest in art. And the only reason I knew that I had any art talent was we had a gifted art teacher who was also my fifth grade teacher, and she taught us some things. So I started making art after that. And again, even though I could logically say that I also must have gotten that from my dad, who died when I was three, I was always looking for people in my family who had similar talent. I could never find anybody. So I actually mentioned that in the letter, and I mailed it. I took it to the post office. I mailed it off that afternoon. And again, that was Friday. And I got an email from him the next Wednesday. He was very warm and kind. He had contacted his sister, Marcia, and she told him that their mom suspected their dad of having an affair with someone else before, you know, I would have come along, and that he couldn't remember the woman's name, but at that time, it wasn't my mother. He said his dad was a gifted artist, which I couldn't repeat for months without bursting into tears. And he and his siblings were stretched out over of about 11 years. So it's really funny, because later when I talked to Marcia, who is 9 years older than me, she said, I wouldn't say he was a gifted artist. He did some crafty things later in his life. And then my oldest sister, Diana, said that he was really good at drawing. So, you know, they all had these different memories of him and experiences, which makes sense. But Mike said he also remembered our family being friends and spending time at each other's houses. And then all of a sudden we didn't. And he also wondered if something had happened, but didn't know, because he was also, even though he was older than me, he was pretty young. And I remember going to their house one time. So I have a very faint memory of my birth father. I just remember walking into their kitchen with my mother. And this would have been after my birth certificate father died, because I don't remember anything before the age of five. But I remember walking into the kitchen and seeing my birth father there with his wife leaning up against the kitchen cabinets, and that's it. But in my letter to Mike, I asked them if one of them would take a DNA test. And in his response, he said that he thought his sister, Deb, had taken one. She was the next oldest sister. So they contacted her, and she had taken a test, but unfortunately it was on 23andMe. When Ancestry.com and 23andMe, they don't talk to each other. So I had to order a 23andMe test and then wait. And Mike also said, I should mention that he and Marcia thought that they wouldn't be surprised if their dad was my dad. So after I turned in the 23andMe test, you know, it was just the big waiting time, and I started searching for support online. I had not heard of the term NPE or MPE. I literally Googled, my father is not my father. I was just like struggling to figure out what even to search for. But then I did find some of the Facebook groups online. So when I got into the support groups and I would look at posts from people who had just recently found out they were NPEs, I see so many people ask, am I losing my mind, or is what I'm experiencing normal? And I just want to say that what I've learned on my journey, that this is a real acute trauma. And a couple of my teachers, I'll go on and talk about that, but I've gone on and studied since then, and a couple of my teachers say that you are having a normal reaction to an abnormal experience. And as I was waiting for the DNA test results to come back, I experienced insomnia. I didn't sleep for weeks. I was thinking about the situation every waking minute. I was running scenarios over and over in my mind. I experienced fatigue and brain fog, and of course, crying and anger and confusion, among other things. And so, you know, that's kind of par for the course, but I just want people to know whatever they're experiencing, again, is a normal reaction to a very abnormal experience.
Thank you for saying that. I think I just needed to hear that too. I just got goosebumps when you said that. So thank you for validating that for all of us.
You're very welcome.
And the traumatic experience that it is.
Yeah. It's like, I think of it as a tsunami. I just feel like my feet went out from under me and I was just totally swept away. I had zero idea that in a million billion years, I never would have guessed this could be my reality. And even, you know, like it's been like, I think over a year and a half now, I still think about it every day. And it's, you know, the aftershocks are kind of less and less, but it's still surreal. And I kind of wonder if it always will be. When this happened, I mean, I had a day job, but I was a life coach on the side. And I was actually building a business, just helping other women generally reach their goals. So I had some tools to help me with this, not enough, because they were mostly tools with working with the mind, kind of cognitive behavioral tools. But I was able to understand that because of the trauma, my higher logical brain had gone offline. And so it was just hard to function. That's what made it hard to function. And the dramatic feelings I was feeling, they were real. And I realized that I needed to try to get into my body and process them so they didn't get stuck. My three biggest feelings were, let's see, it was agony. I can't believe I can't remember them now. Agony. And I can't remember the other two. Maybe I'll think of them. But they were like the most dramatic feelings I had. Oh, yeah. Torment and torture. And they were the most dramatic feelings I'd ever felt. I wasn't a very dramatic person. So I tried to do that a little bit. I wasn't totally successful because, you know, I was just too far into the trauma still. And unfortunately, part of the healing is just letting time pass, no matter how much you want to feel better. And there's no time limit. It's different for everybody, for sure. But I got my results pretty quickly. I got my results December 1st of 2022, even though it seemed like it was forever. And it did show, in fact, that Deb was, in fact, my half-sister. I emailed Mike and Marcia, and they were really nice and gracious about it. Mike was like, kind of like, wow, this is kind of amazing and cool. And Marcia was like, well, I guess, you know, the best thing we can do is just move forward with this. And so they were both really nice. And we immediately started making plans to go back to Ohio, where the brother I grew up with was still living, so I could tell him in person. I felt that was very important. I also wanted to look in his eyes. I wanted to know if he knew, because I was just curious about that. And I also told my newly discovered siblings I was coming home. So we planned to meet for dinner with three of them. My oldest sister doesn't live in Ohio anymore, but I was able to become friends with her on Facebook. And I think she's maybe 13 or 14 years older than me. She's just like kind of taken it in stride. And we've talked a little bit, but not really extensively. So I went home and in January and told my brother, and it went really well. I mean, he said, well, you're still my sister, which, you know, sometimes when outsiders say that to us, we don't want to hear that kind of stuff. But to me, you know, he was saying, it doesn't matter. You're still my sister. Mm-hmm. And then that night I had to go out to dinner with my newly discovered siblings, and that went well. We just laughed a lot and talked, and my husband said you could tell we were siblings. So I don't know, but the really funny thing happened after dinner. I'm addicted to chapstick. So I literally have like about half a dozen chapstick scattered about the house and in my purse and everywhere. So I always have it. And I pulled out chapstick after we ate, and I was kind of trying to discreetly putting on because I figured it looked kind of dorky. And one of my newly discovered sister's sister, Marcia, her husband from across the table pointed at me and said, oh my gosh. And everybody looked and they saw the chapstick and they started laughing. And apparently that's a big family joke. They're all addicted to chapstick. Of all the things. And they always have to have it. And like I said, it's a family joke. Oh. So, oh my gosh, that was so funny. But So I didn't, the night went really fast. I didn't want it to end. I really wanted them to like me. My people pleasing tendencies were coming up big time. Like all that stuff came up after this happened. And I've had to like kind of start to finally, I hope, work through things I've kind of been dealing with all my life. But after that, the night that was over, I went back to my brother's house, and I think he had, you know, knocked back a few couple drinks to kind of, you know, relax himself. And he told me some things about our family that I didn't know. He told me my mom and dad fought a lot, but not so much after I was born. I had no idea. I don't know that I've ever heard my mom really raise her voice, and she never told me that. So that was a surprise. She told me that they wanted me and they were excited when my mom got pregnant. And that was really wonderful to know, because I didn't know, because they just said I was a surprise. I really didn't know what their feelings were about it, especially being almost 40 years old. And he told me my birth certificate father and my birth father were best friends, that there were four of them. They were all World War II vets, actually heroes. They all had lots of medals. I went home to accept a medal on behalf of my birth certificate father before I found all this out, actually, too. And he told me that my birth certificate father, when he was in the war, he sent home all his money to his parents, and he had left his car with his parents too. And when he got back from the war, they had spent all his money and sold his car to pay for things on the farm. So my birth certificate father had nothing. And when he married my mother, they had to live for a while on the farm with his parents. And my mother never told me any of that. So it just initially shifted everything I thought about my family. And I was actually glad that my birth certificate parents were not related to me. I decided at that moment my birth certificate father was my father, and because he was the one who wanted me and he was the one who took care of me for the 3 years that we were on the earth together. And my brother told me that when my birth certificate father was dying, he pointed at him and said, now you're the man of the family. You need to take care of your mother and your sister. And my brother was 18 years old. And it made me understand my brother a lot more, because he was kind of gruff and kind of distant. But I always knew he loved me, but he was never kind of like the warm, fuzzy brother that I wanted to have. But I understood now, because that was a lot. That was not right to put that on him at that time. Mm-hmm. So I started to do a lot of work and started to do a lot of reading about intergenerational trauma. And then I also enrolled in a trauma recovery certification course. And I did that because I started to see online about how people were really suffering. And like after 4 years, how people were really struggling with this. And I decided I wanted to help other NPEs. So I actually enrolled in that course in February of 2023, which was, you know, really sweet when I look back on it, but I wasn't really ready yet. I was still recovering. And so I kind of had to like go back and forth between taking care of myself and then jumping in and trying to get caught up with the course. And I did make it through, and I did get certified in December 31st of 2023, which was, I thought, was a fitting ending to that crazy year. You know, and during all that, my story really became about intergenerational trauma. I started doing lots of digging and lots of reading about intergenerational trauma. And I started looking at kind of the themes of my life. And I started, as I dug into my newly discovered father's life, realized that some of the things that I was carrying were from people I didn't even know that I was related to, which was kind of interesting. And the core belief I had all my life was kind of that I was a screw up because I got pregnant in college. And I know I really disappointed my mother and my brother. And I also had the thought that my mother and my brother were all I had. I thought I had this little family and that was it. And like everything, all my beliefs were blown out of the water. And I guess that's been the blessing in that for me, because I've been able to let go of my limiting beliefs, you know, to the best of my ability, definitely way more than I had, even with a lifetime of work and interest in personal development. And so I'm just kind of going for everything that I want to go for. I've gotten into 3 juried art shows in the last year, and I won awards at all 3 of them. And so...
Doreen, what kind of shows are these? What did you say?
Art shows for my...
Oh, art shows. Oh, yeah. It's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. So it's kind of, like I said, it's just kind of blown away everything I thought. And I just realized, I think I read a statistic that like 80% of our beliefs aren't even ours to begin with. They come from our family, our community, our religions, our greater culture. And so I just feel kind of free to kind of rebuild my identity in a conscious way, in the way I want to. And I hope, I'm afraid to say this online, but I'm actually hope to come up with a course to help other people do that. I'm working on that right now. Mm. In terms of my family, once I got back home, I started emailing on a regular basis with Marcia and Deb. And I'm still emailing with Marcia. I haven't heard from Deb since January. And I kind of wonder if, you know, you see that with other people too, who are NPEs, like they start out and they start to get to know their newly discovered siblings and they think they're developing a relationship, and then all of a sudden they get ghosted. So yeah. I kind of wonder if that's happening. If that had happened, you know, like 6 months after the discovery, I would have been devastated, but now I've kind of got some distance and I have peace with it. The other funny thing I forgot to mention is while we were waiting for the results, they kept asking, there was this DNA match on 23andMe. Her name was Jody. She was from England and she was the same age as my oldest daughter. So she was married in 1983 and she was coming up as our niece. And they kept asking me before the results came in if I knew her, if she was like a part of my family. And I said, no, I'd never heard of her. So it turns out our birth father also had an affair with a woman at the end of the war in England. And there was a son from that tryst. I know that it was a consensual thing, or at least I believe it was, because this woman named her son after my birth father. Mm. And he's still alive, but he's kind of estranged from Jody. I have messaged Jody and started talking to her and established a relationship with her. So I have this half niece in England and this adorable great half niece in England named Finney, short for Josephine. And I also have 2 other a niece and a nephew over there who aren't interested in getting to know me. And there was another niece that has passed away tragically at a young age from cancer. And I have this gymongous family. I don't even know how many nieces and nephews and great nieces and nephews I have. I start to chart it and try to figure it out. And it's kind of sad. I can't finish it because I know that I will probably never meet most of these people. My newly discovered siblings have been welcoming, but you know, they also grew up in this small town and their parents were well known. And our birth father apparently really cared what people thought and always just, in, you know, just like beat into them that they needed to, you know, be good people. And so it's kind of blown their minds too, that he was capable of doing all this. He did stay married to the same woman, their mother, for their entire lives. And they said that he took care of her at the end of her life. So I was happy to hear that.
I have a question about your birth father. Do you think he knew about you or about the son in England?
That's a good question. That's a mystery. And nobody knows. Nobody else has any insight into that either. So we just don't know. And we don't know what the nature of his relationship with my mother was either, if it was a one-time thing or if it was an ongoing thing. Mm-hmm. The other funny thing that happened was after I got the results, I started digging into my real ancestry on my father's side. And I kept coming up with a bunch of DNA matches from here in Colorado, like an hour and a half from where I live. And what I discovered is that they're Volga Germans. They're Germans that left Germany in the 1700s and went to Russia because Catherine the Great promised them free land. And they were, you know, like peasants or serfs or whatever they called them. So they did, there was a lot of war in Germany at the time. So they didn't have a great life and they were trying to make a better life for themselves. And this is a group of people that's, that has historians that's written about them. And so I was able to join the American Historical Society of Germans from Russia. And they have a convention every year. And in 2023, it was right here in Colorado, an hour and a half from where I live. And so I got to go. I was hoping to meet some. I met one very distant relative, but I think she was the only one. And from my research, I found that when things started turning sour in Russia and they all started coming to the United States, of all of my ancestors, one line of them went to Northwest Ohio and the other line went to Colorado, close to where I live now. And it's really bizarre because we had no desire. It wasn't even on our radar to move here until our daughter was going to move here. So that's just fun, kind of an interesting footnote.
It is. I want to go back to talking about your, do you call it the trauma recovery coach? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
TRC.
Yeah.
Was it really your, because I've been seeing this on social media and it's, this sounds so helpful and like such an amazing, amazing process. Was it the NPE discovery that really led you down that path?
Totally. I wouldn't even have looked it up. I started to understand that maybe being trauma informed as a life coach, maybe getting a little bit of education in terms of being trauma informed would be good because a lot of people have trauma in their life. But it was just when I started looking for the help. And then it was actually through one of the Facebook groups. I found their nonprofit and they were the ones that partnered with the people who designed the trauma recovery coaching program and actually are the only ones in the world, they say, to have a specialization in NPEs. And that's why I went with them. Yeah, but I definitely feel strongly that education is so helpful because it just normalizes everything that you're going through. And then the other part of it is learning to deal with what's going on in your nervous system and in your body. So the trauma doesn't get trapped there. And so I'm currently also in the middle of getting a certificate in somatic embodiment. And that's been really amazing as well. It's with a woman named Linda Tai who works with Bessel van der Kolk, who wrote The Body Keeps the Score. Yeah. Oh.
That book was great.
Yeah.
Hard, but great.
Hard. Yeah.
Very hard. Yes. Yep. I had to read it in bits and pieces just because of so much that was coming up.
For sure. Yeah. Mm. Yep.
I have a feeling people might want to reach out to you and ask questions about this or about your story. Would you be willing to let people contact you?
Sure.
What would be the best way to get in touch with you?
So they can contact me at my business email address, which is, and I'll spell out my name, but it's doreen@thetruthofme.com. So there's no spaces or underscores or dots or anywhere with anything with the truth of me, but it's doreen@thetruthofme.com.
I will put a link down below in the show description to those contact details for Doreen. And Doreen, thank you so much for sharing everything with me today. This has been a great experience. I appreciate you so much. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you so much. I have listened to so many of your podcast episodes and they break my heart and heal me at the same time. And I just really thank you for doing that.
These stories are here for us to identify with. If you are an NPE and would like to share your story, email npestories@gmail.com. You do not have to give any identifying information. If you are an NPE and would like to share your story, I'd like to hear from you. Subscribe to this podcast to hear more. Come heal with us.